Hello, hello, and welcome to another Daily Fringe Show. I'm Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Anlu Kiewa. Anlu, how are you this fine Friday afternoon?
Hello, Nicholas. I'm doing very well, thank you. This week went past in a snap of a finger, so doing very well, thank you.
Indeed. Now, today we're only going to be talking about one thing, which is the State of the Nation address. So I'm not sure how long we'll be. Maybe we'll be shorter than longer than usual. Maybe we'll be longer than normal. But we'll get into it. I just want to say first off the bat, though, that it's a very good thing that today is, in Cape Town at least, fairly mild. Because I didn't watch the State of the Nation address live. I watched it this morning, recorded. And I watched the whole thing start to finish. There weren't too much theatrics from opposition parties. It seems to have, largely become boring for the political parties. No one seems to be trying that anymore. And I kind of, it left me actually in a bit of a state of kind of mush. It was like my brain wasn't quite functional after watching the whole thing all in one go. And it got me thinking about what exactly is the point of the State of the Nation address. I mean, well, what it says on the tin, right? It's supposed to be a discussion, a announcement of what the nation, how the nation is doing at the beginning of a new term or a new year of parliament. But sort of in a more practical sense, what is it supposed to be? Is it supposed to announce new government policies? Well, you know, in theory, I guess. So here's how I view the structure of the State of the Nation address. It starts off with this kind of padding from Ramaphosa talking about, you know, what we've heard in 1,000 ANC speeches. Remember this great moment in our struggle against apartheid. This time he was talking about, I think it was the Women's March. Then he goes on to talk about how great everything is. And then it goes through essentially a paragraph by paragraph summation of government ideas or policy or, I don't know, replies to each sort of major sector or problem in the country in recent years. And that's why it's so long. Is this sort of like, this is what we're doing about this crime. This is what we're doing about this sector, et cetera, et cetera. And one way to think of the State of the Nation is you could say, okay, well, this is everyone setting up the plan for the year. This is a promise by the president that he can sort of be held account to. This is like what government is really going to focus on. But one of the problems is that these speeches don't have a lot of credibility. Infamously, Ramaphosa has, for example, in 2019 said that Eskom would be unbundled. And then in 2022, he said, I think by the end of 2023, it would be unbundled. And Eskom is still not really unbundled. They've at least now created the new transmission company, and there's still some dispute about exactly how it's going to be done. So, Anlu, I kind of think to myself, well, you know, normally you would say, okay, if the president says in the State of the Nation address, it gives it a little bit more credibility and more focus. But that's not really the case, is it? That just sort of, we seem to be missing that aspect of it. What, do you think I'm right about that?
Yeah, so see, the thing with the State of the Nation address is that it's one of the rare occasions where we have all three arms of the state in one room, essentially. We have the executive, the judiciary, and the legislative arms, obviously, in the same room. So it's supposed to be this symbol of a stable democracy. But I agree with you that there's very little credibility to what is being said at the SONA address or at the State of the Nation address. I think it's supposed to be this progress report, which is what I'm missing from it, is that there's new promises and existing promises being repeated, but there's very little being said about why certain goals weren't met. Often they refer back to budget, perhaps, but there's very few occasions where I've actually heard the president say, listen, this has not been done because of this. It's usually...
Right. These speeches exist like in a vacuum, almost.
Yes, exactly. I mean, there are very good reasons that our economy has not grown. There are very good reasons for our crime issue. He mentions particularly the organized crime. There are good reasons why nothing has been done, or things like the Zondo report recommendations from it has not been implemented. But the problem, and I think the reason that we're not hearing these in this progress report, which SONA is supposed to be, is because many of the problems is in government. It points the finger back at them. So I agree with you. It's supposed to be this event of accountability, and it's supposed to set the agenda for the year. But because there is so little credibility to what is being said, I think it's not genuinely a progress report. I think it's lacking in that aspect.
Yeah, exactly. And in terms of its sort of political objectives, or what's its political objective? It's sort of to get the population to see what the government has been doing, right? And you sort of say, here's what we've been doing for you. Here's what we're going to be doing for each particular interest group in the country. Here's what we're doing for, like, mining, people who are concerned about the murder of women or whatever, right? But because the speech is so long, because it's so bloated, I think that its effectiveness as political messaging is really blunted. Think about, like, if you ordinary, so how many ordinary South Africans do we think watched the whole thing? I think there's probably a fair number of people who did at least tune into the beginning of it, maybe. But what you'll find is very quickly that number probably drops off. And even if someone sits through the whole speech, how many people actually remember the whole thing? Maybe they'll remember one or two things. But I think from a sort of political strategy point, cutting this thing way down. I mean, you don't need to go through every sector. In most cases, you know, the stuff being said about a particular sector is known to the role players who are involved there, right? Like when he says, oh, we're doing this thing or whatever for mining, people in the mining industry will usually know that. And you might say, okay, well, if he says in the State of the Nation address, that means it's more likely to happen, or it's a good place to announce it because he can't backtrack from things there. But, you know, as we just discussed in the credibility problem, that's not really true. So I think if you cut it down to, I don't know, maybe 40 minutes, and you kind of themed it more than doing this sort of, you know, laundry list item thing that seems to be going on in all the SONAs, I think it would actually be far more as a political tool to try and shape the narrative of your term in office, which I don't think this succeeds in doing, just because, as everyone says, you know, sounds like the same speech from every year. I mean, this one, when he talked about things going well, he at least had a bit more evidence than usual, right? The economic situation is still not great, and we've explained why in other episodes why we think that it's not as rosy as some people are painting it, but it's better than it's been in recent years, for sure. What do you make of that point, Anlu? Do you agree that, you know, the president could be using this for his own ends actually more effectively?
Yeah. So first, on the point of the length of the speech, I agree with you. So post interview by Mark Berg, he said that he just thought that it could have been an email, which I get that idea that people often think they need another meeting to set this whole thing. And it is cool, I must admit. It was wonderful to watch the whole country almost coming together, all the parades. It is a spectacle. Okay, I get that it's become a red carpet spectacle and that it's, in a sense, very annoying. But I did like to see these marches. It was quite nice. But perhaps that's just my materialistic or visionary aspect.
Yeah, no, there's something to a bit of pageantry and a bit of, you know, showmanship. But I think there's two problems with that. One is that we know that so many of the systems holding up that showmanship are very weak. You know, like if you have jets flying by or something, you know that this is like 50% of the fly time they're getting in the year, right? Yes. And two, for me, it's a bit kind of monarchical, right? It's sort of like, you know, the emperor has come to, you know, bless his subjects with his presence, which I think is not very appropriate for, you know, a Republican form of government. You know, it's just my sort of thought. I mean, don't get me wrong. I like monarchies. I think they're kind of interesting and cool, but we are not one.
Yeah. No, and I think that's a very good point. It felt like a spectacle because we know that the underlying structures are not really stable or holding them upright. Correct. One of the interviews that I listened beforehand with, it was somebody from the military. I genuinely apologize. Like, I'm not great with those kinds of names. But one of the things that she said on ENCA was that, it doesn't matter whether it was SABC or ENCA, but she said that they've been training 2 years for this march, which I get that it's a regular thing, but just the fact that she explains it as they've been training 2 years for this march and not for the actual purpose was a little bit like, I don't know if I like to hear that, but that's what you ask him. But yeah, so on the length issue, I agree. And I think that's why we have the budget. It's supposed to split the length in half, because many of the things that he anyway discussed here, like the SONA essentially says what will be done, and then the budget says how it will be done or how it will be paid.
Right. Yeah.
Or whether it will be paid for at all.
Because the budget is where the details are.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So I genuinely don't think we need this hour-long spectacle where he goes through every department and every aspect of it. Give us the, like, we have all the news articles that I've read this morning says 20 most important points, 10 most important points, 11 most important points. I mean, the fact that we have to summarize them already tells you that it was way too long. When the budget comes, address the things that didn't fit into the speech. So I definitely agree with you.
Right. And there's also a whole debate in Parliament over the budget, right? They sort of, all the MPs, and all those issues do get sort of brought up there. So if you're looking for something specific that concerns whatever aspect of life or whatever issue you're interested in, that stuff is publicly out there. It's discussed. It's not like it's never talked about. In fact, if anything, government talks far too much about its various plans, but then doesn't do things. I think that's exactly right. You know, before we get into the actual content of the speech, it's really what SONA should be is a short sort of narrative point talking about where we are, what has gone wrong, and what we will do differently to fix those problems. How the sort of narrative about where we want to take the country, a couple of like three or four highlights about what government will doing and they be doing, and then you're done, you're out, and then the details can come later in the budget and the debate in Parliament. So I don't think we'll get our wish anytime soon. In fact, I fear that even if we get a change of government, once it kind of becomes a habit of doing SONA this way, I think it's unfortunately going to be stuck with us for a very long time. And unfortunately, it's not just a South African problem. I mean, if you go and watch, for example, the State of the Union address in the United States, I think it's become very similar in structure with the sort of laundry list point thing. And I think that's actually just a waste of everyone's time. So let's get into the actual content. We'll be pulling from some of the summaries written. There's going to be a water crisis war room, which, just before we go on. Yeah. So we've heard the war room thing before. I mean, remember there was the Eskom war room that supposedly was operating through all the great periods of load shedding, although no one seemed to keep any real track about it, and whether it did anything. I think honestly here, this is a recurring theme of Ramaphosa, is that he never sort of puts any pressure on his own party, right? He never confronts the ANC and says, guys, we need to do better in this or that. And when he does, it's often in quite general, vague terms, or he's talking down to like councillors, right? When he said, oh, councillors, we need to learn from the DA and do better there. He should be taking on Lesufi, actually, or Dada Marrero in Joburg. He could, I think, somewhat salvage his party's reputation if he said, this is not up to the standards of the ANC. This crisis has got out of control. The ANC's National Executive Committee will be, and the principle of democratic centralism will be enforcing its will on the crisis. We cannot allow this constitutional right of citizens in Gauteng and the rest of the country to be ignored, blah, 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 blah. You know, I mean, he doesn't actually have to do anything. I think just in terms of messaging, that would be better. But instead, it's kind of like, no, we'll do a war room, and like things are not great. I don't know.
No, that's exactly the thing. He always pulls together a comedy. He's always the one. Just the solution that he offers is not actually making the changes necessary, not actually stepping in. The changes he is proposing is to actually pull together a comedy, which takes months to put together a report, which takes months to be implemented, if implemented at all. So yeah. There's no hope for it. I think great. We do need a solution for the water crisis, but this is not it.
I mean, in a lot of ways, the solution is just to implement, as you know, as the DA made clear in its recent court challenge, or its discussion of court challenges, there is actually a plan. It's just not funded and not implemented. So just do that. It's a problem of political leadership, and that's exactly the thing he doesn't want to talk about, which I think once again demonstrates his weakness. So anyway, let me go on with some of the other things. He said that organized crime is the greatest enemy of our democracy at the moment, which is actually, I think, probably true. He talked about gang violence, illegal mining, and there the army and police will be deployed to fight organized crime and gangs, which is a thing that's been done before. It sometimes helps a bit, but it's a very temporary measure. Foot and mouth disease was declared a national disaster. That's probably a good thing. He did, however, recommit to keeping the vaccine distribution centralized. Now, there are some arguments in favor of that, right, which is, and you sort of laid them out here, that you need to make sure you have the right vaccines, because apparently there are other strains of foot and mouth, which sometimes people get the wrong vaccines. But, you know, I think that's probably a pretty quickly, easily solvable problem. The other is that, you know, if you have a kind of decentralized, chaotic system, you don't always know who's been vaccinated and who hasn't. So it's difficult to kind of build the sort of firewalls. Fair enough. But those are all solvable problems while still decentralizing the distribution and purchasing of these vaccines. And with government capacity being so weak. Yeah, no. So look.
Responsibilities.
Yeah, exactly. I think that, you know, good that he mentioned it and sort of reinforced the plan here. But I think the sort of tripling down of the policy and, you know, and John Steenhuisen is, of course, also part of this, is, I think, a mistake, because the state just doesn't have the capacity.
No, I definitely agree with that. I think the state has in many aspects shown that there's no credibility to them actually taking responsibility for it. They're not transparent. They're not accountable. I genuinely think the private sector can handle it much better. Better idea for them to set aside the aspect.
You know, I think with so many of these issues, I've gotten to the point now where, yes, there's an ideological debate to be had over whether the state should do it or business or individuals should do these sort of things, with the state playing a supportive role. But with this, with such incredible weakness in our state, we can't even have that ideological discussion because, you know, you can say we're going to take state action, but the capacity just often isn't there.
Yeah.
Okay. So one of the other things on the list was Eskom unbundling. we've talked about this on the show, but Ramaphosa seemed to try and sabotage the Eskom unbundling. I saw News24 reported this as a rebuke against Ramaphosa. Do you agree that what Ramaphosa said was a rebuke to Ramaphosa?
No, not quite. But I think this is once again one of those things that it's not the first time we've heard this. It's not the first time. We've definitely heard it before. So no, I just think that's
been
the
in
thing.
Every sauna since Cyril became president.
Exactly. So no, there's some sort of miscommunication between the two. I don't know if we actually should owe it to the miscommunication. But I just don't even see the necessity to even consider whether this will happen or not until they actually implement it. And that's the thing. So I kind of feel like with many of these plans, the devil doesn't lie in the detail for South Africa. It lies in the implementation. So I'd like to actually see a plan for this to happen and then to consider whether it will actually happen. Great if the president can get it to happen, but yeah, I don't see that it will happen.
And I think part of the problem is that Ramaphosa's, well, not, you know, when he had power over the ANC, and I think, you know, he was genuinely in quite tight control of it, he didn't use that power. And now it seems increasingly as though his control of the ANC is slipping away as he comes towards the end of his term and as the ANC devolves into infighting over the next leader. And, yeah. You know, about this implementation thing, lifestyle audits for police was another one. And this is supposed to be coming out of the Matlanga Commission. Well, okay, that's fine. But the problem is not that we don't know who the bad guys are. The problem is that they never get fired.
Yeah, the problem is we've identified them multiple times, but what happens to them? Nothing.
Right, right.
Nothing happens after that.
what you can easily see happening is there's a lifestyle audit. It says, you know, all these police officials and all these politicians are living way beyond their means, and there's no way they could be legitimately getting this money. And then no one will do anything about it. So, that's kind of silly. State-owned property company. I think John and I talked about this earlier in the week. Could be a good idea, just to kind of organize the state's assets better. Also vulnerable point of corruption and capture. Commercial courts to resolve disputes over tenders faster. That seems like a good thing if it could actually be done.
Can I just add something to that point? I like the idea. I think, okay, great. Let's get the queues down. Let's get these legal issues or legal disputes out of the way. But will we actually have the budget to do this? Courts are already quite underfunded. I don't know when last you've been in an actual courthouse, never mind paying the salaries of the judges and the people who work there. But our courthouses aren't yet exactly in the greatest shape. And many of these buildings are actually quite beautiful old buildings. So just the structure of these buildings already is struggling to hold its bricks together. This specifically was one of those points where I thought, yeah, great, but let's see how it's implemented.
Yeah. There was some talk about local government. He talks about the local government white paper, which, you know, probably will have that it's being redone. There'll probably be some good ideas in that. I think we wrote a submission on that. I think I was part of drafting that, actually, if I remember correctly. be that as it may, of course, the real problem with local government at the moment, I think, is the policy of cater deployment, which has prioritized loyalty to the political party over competence over and over again. And that's actually what's completely ruined local government, is that, well, as long as you're a good cater of the movement of the ANC, you don't get held to account in matter how much you destroy a municipality. And of course, he didn't mention that. And in fact, you know, as we've pointed out many times, Ramaphosa himself has been to court to defend cater deployment as a policy. So,
One of the things that he also said related to local government is that they are planning on laying criminal charges against municipal managers at their, like, in their personal capacity for failing to supply specifically water, which was under his water crisis management situation, which was an interesting point, because I do think there is a sense of personal accountability that needs to be, like, you need to hold these people personally accountable.
I think that's a popular idea.
Yeah. I think it's it's good. Hold these people accountable, because those are the people that made the decisions or looked the other way. But I'm sure it's going to be interesting to see where the dots connect with their own cadres, and it's them having to file criminal charges.
This also feeds back into my point, right? Is that what's the issue here? Well, the thing is, you know, you don't have to take a municipal manager to court, because we have a system that's supposed to hold officials to account. It's called the mayor and the council. Mm-hmm. You can fire those guys. The political leadership can fire those guys, but if the political leadership aren't being held to account, and then, you know, either they need to be held to account by voters, or they need to be held to account by their own political party. And if that doesn't happen, well, then they're not going to hold the municipal manager to account. So, you know, you can get rid of the officials, and what, the mayor's going to appoint just another cadre or another, you know, crony or something, and then you're right back where you started. So what's, you know,
you are not quite where you started, because you are now minus all your legal costs.
Right, exactly. So yeah, no, I think it's a lot of people cling to that idea, because it seems like it has, you know, it's accountability, it's someone facing legal action for mucking about. And I'm sure there are municipal managers around the country who certainly probably deserve to go before a court and be held accountable. But, you know, it's not really fixing the root of the problem here. Pulling out of the DRC, considering the state of the Defense Force, Ricardo and I have talked about that. Seems like a pretty good idea. Some stuff about enforcing, protecting the borders and illegal immigration, but also pushing back against harassing illegal immigrants or immigrants at all in public, as has been done by groups like Operation Dudula. You know, that's welcome. Lots of stuff about digital this and digital that, which, you know, is a good idea, but like, I just don't trust government's ability to actually implement it for the most part. And he couldn't help himself. He still did mention bullet trains.
Yes.
We need to get to Messina much faster. We need to travel between Joburg and Durban. Cool. Nice. Lovely. Let's get the normal trains working first, and then we can do the bullet trains. So, Unlu, my overall impression was, you know, judged by the low standards of other sonas, was fine. What did you think was missing, and what was your overall takeaway from Sona?
Yeah, so I agree, and I have a general positive feeling about the Sona. I think it had that new year, new me feeling to it, or energy to it, that we hopefully all went into the year with. and yeah, there are some exciting details or exciting reforms. But I think the finer details, especially, again, apologies for those listening that I have to be the budget person, but especially about how these ambitious plans will actually be funded. I think that it's left me wondering in that aspect.
So, you know, one of the big issues, as we brought up, has been procurement, right? And our colleague from IRR Legal, Gabriel Krauser, has put forward this value for money bill, which, you know, basically just seeks to change our procurement system in a way that you actually get, well, as we say on the tin, value for money. And so much of what's, and that's kind of, I think, a theme that ties the whole of Sona together, right? To get most of this stuff done, you need to be able to spend money effectively. And right now, our procurement system is completely rotten. It is, BEE is used as a cover to inflate costs and engage in corruption. There's just total misspending of money. Government doesn't get a lot of bang for its buck. And as a result, even when government has a good idea, which is not often, but when it does, it isn't able to actually do the thing because it has to spend so much money through our rotten procurement system. So, yeah. I mean, you know, what did he mention about the procurement bill? Oh, well, we've got this new procurement bill and that'll sort out the procurement problem. Anyway, on to the next topic. And of course, yeah, that's not at all true. The current procurement legislation and even the upcoming stuff, it's not in any position, I think, to fix things. Your thoughts on
that? I just want to point out that I obviously understand what you meant, but I don't think it's government not getting bang for their buck. I think it's South Africans not getting bang for our buck, because it's through us. Yes. But I 100% understood what you meant. I just want to point that out, that it's often something that we think is like, it's their money, but it's not their money. It's our money. And we're supposed to get value for our money. So that's and to that point, I think it is something that was completely missing in the, well, at least missing in terms of not enough. That's the thing that he didn't zone in on. He didn't say enough on it. And it's one of the actual things that would have affected everything else in the Sona, everything else in the budget, and frankly speaking, everything else in all South Africans' lives, because that's the one thing that will genuinely change our prospects. And then something else that I missed in the reforms that he mentioned is labor reforms, labor market reforms. There genuinely was very little on it. Your policies that we needed to see were actually just looked over completely.
Right. And that's exactly, I think that's why I said judged by the standards of other Sonas, which is that, you know, you could say there was definitely some focus on the right problems, like the talking about economic growth, talking about jobs, which I think was one of the sort of highlighted things, and saying that this is the primary objective of the country. Correct. This is a good place to be. It's not on redistributing this piece of land to this person here. It's not about, you know, building national prestige. It's not about digital sovereignty or whatever other silly things we heard come out of the ANC and its ideological bedfellows for so long. Economic growth. Cool. We're on the same page there. Everyone agrees. But then how are we going to get there? Well, yeah, there's a couple of reforms here or there, but on the big stuff, procurement, labor legislation, yeah, property rights, no, we're just going to keep on doing what we're doing.
Yeah, and, exactly. And they're different outcomes. No, 100%.
And I think
Sorry?
No, go ahead, go ahead.
One of the I'm sorry, I know we're close to time, so I'll keep this very short, as short as I can at least. But one of the things that I noticed in the reforms that he mentioned is a housing subsidy. So they're planning on changing the structure of how they provide houses. So instead of now actually building people new houses, they're planning on giving them a subsidy to sailors, and you can now go rent a house, buy a house and rent it out, whatever you want to do with it, which I think there's some good pros to it. I think there's upside to it in the sense that
yes,
now people, it will stimulate the market and people will likely get better access to mortgages and finance for housing, which will in turn obviously and stimulate the market.
Ordinary people have more choice, hopefully, yes, in how, you know, money is actually spent, which is, I think, a very good thing.
Yeah, choice in terms of where they want to live, what type of house they want to buy, what they want to do with the money. So in that sense, 100%, I agree with you. But perhaps just something that I picked up again, or that I was reminded of when I read this or heard it and read it, is that South Africa has obviously had, there was changes in the way that government provided housing. And in 1994, the backlog stood at something like 1.5 million units, which is a lot. But then, so they had this whole project and this whole reform case. And then in 2024, which is now 2 years ago, the backlog stood at 5.2 million houses. So it actually increased, although they did supply lots of houses. But so just from that, you can kind of see that the current way of doing it isn't really working. And then something that our colleague, Dr. Anthea Jeffries, pointed out, or the explanation rather that she offers for the changes we've seen in the way government provides housing for people, is that because of the scale of the housing backlog, in 1994, the government focused more on providing more people with houses rather than focusing on providing fewer people with better houses. And then they've obviously implemented all these different subsidies. So there's almost, if I'm not mistaken, there's 11 types of subsidies for housing, which I hope we are yet to see the plans around how this subsidy will work. But I'm hoping that it's not a 12th. I'm hoping that this is the subsidy that almost takes together all those other subsidies and has one housing voucher, if you want to call it, have one housing voucher, and through that actually simplify the entire process.
Yes.
Because all these different housing vouchers have, for this voucher, high-income people need to earn this, low-income people need to earn this, they need to get paid this. All of those regular criteria elements genuinely complicate the entire process and the entire subsidy. So you don't really see the benefits of those subsidies. Yeah. Keeping an eye on that one.
On a high level, that is something I forgot to mention, is it is something that stuck out to me, is that it is a rare area, I think, where the ANC has sort of actually moved a little bit on its ideological priors, right? So the original idea was, we're going to build everyone who needs one a house. Mm-hmm. And it's become very apparent, both due to the inefficiencies of government, but also due to just the fact that it's really difficult to do. That's not really feasible. And it does seem that this is a position the ANC has actually moved on, which is quite rare for the party, towards, you know, as Ramaphosa put it, helping people to get accommodation rather than just building houses for them. And, you know, as you say, if that's done correctly, that's actually the right way to go. Housing vouchers is a thing we proposed before. That the government gives people who can't afford housing an ability to get into the housing market. Basically, it spends money on them, but it lets them have the power and the choice about how and where that money gets spent. And that is hopefully, as you say, it's like the details are important on this. But from what he said, it seems like government might be moving a little bit more in that direction. And I know even quite left, you know, sort of the further left people in the ANC have even started to say things like this, like, oh, we can't build a house for everyone. So that is an important improvement, I think, on where we are when it comes to housing. And indeed, housing, you know, it's still an issue for millions and millions of people, but I think compared to 1994, it's not quite as all-encompassing an issue as it was then. You know, now people are much more focused on jobs and employment, and growing wealth is ultimately the only real way you can solve housing problems, right?
Yeah.
People need jobs, people need money, people need an economy that actually allows them to earn a living and build things.
Yeah, definitely.
Any final thoughts before we close up for today?
There's so many points that he mentioned that I know we can't get to all of them, and I'm sure that you will still discuss some of them. But there's just two other things that is obviously big headline things. It's firstly the military going into the Western Cape and Gauteng, which I'm sure you will discuss in the future. But I'm a little bit worried always if I hear the military moving into communities. I understand why in this case. Military is not
police force.
Yeah, exactly. There are some serious concerns around not even talking about yet to extract them one day. Hopefully, which is not one day, like far in the future. But I always get nervous around the military moving into communities. Of course, the digital ID, I have my own views on that. And obviously, I think there's great skepticism to be had about it, given our government's credibility. Yeah, I think that's about it. There's many more, but I think the worst outcome from the SONA could now be that we think that the upsides that we have seen, the little bit of growth that we've had, the little bit of the rand strengthening, the JSE performing better, that we take these as now, well, that these breed complacency within us. And within the politicians. So, it's not the end of the road. I think there's much still that has to be done, but overall still a positive SONA.
Yes, on the point about soldiers, we must, of course, not forget the killing of Collins Khoza, who was assaulted by soldiers in his yard. And to this day, I believe no one has suffered any actual legal consequence for that killing. And it is a reminder of, firstly, the lack of accountability in South Africa, but also the fact that the military ultimately is not supposed to police. It's supposed to defend and kill, actually. And that's why any use of it is a very short-term solution. But of course, we've left the most important point about the SONA for last, and that is that the national dialogue is still alive. Apparently. And in fact, it's going to be going out to the whole of the country or something this year. I don't know, who cares. Anyway, have a wonderful weekend, everyone. I hope you all have a restful end of the week, and we'll see you all on Monday. Thanks very much, everyone.